From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, The Supernatural. And I've got to tell you, tonight I've become a great grandfather. Yeah. Little Mila joins our world, bouncing in at 8 pounds, 7 ounces. Let's hope we build a great planet for little ones like her. It's really cool. I get to go back in October and see her. Here's what's happening. Dorian's Corps is brushing the coast of North Carolina, warned the National Hurricane Center in its latest update. It's now about 60 miles northeast of Wilmington, North Carolina. The Hurricane Center is expected to move near or over the North Carolina coast tonight and Friday before heading to Nova Scotia on Saturday. The hurricane's maximum sustained winds have slowed slightly to 100 miles an hour. Still a Category 2. It's expected to speed up through Saturday. Continue with your intention experiment, because at least for the United States is concerned, and maybe we should have been a little more specific, it seems like we have not had the brunt of what Hurricane Dorian was. The Bahamas got it, of course. But keep thinking of downgrading it and pushing it east into the Atlantic Ocean. Meanwhile, in the Bahamas, the death toll from Hurricane Dorian now has risen to 30. They expect that to go substantially higher as they continue to go through rubble in that devastation. A doctor in India has performed a series of 5 coronary intervention procedures on patients who were 20 miles away from him. The feat was pulled off using a precision vascular robot developed by a company. The results of the surgeries, very successful. The feat is an example of telemedicine, an emerging field that leverages advances in networking, robotics, mixed reality, and communications technology to beam in medical experts to remote locations for surgical procedures. Truly remarkable. Let's just hope the internet never goes down when they're doing those kinds of surgeries. People who eat vegan and vegetarian diets have a lower risk of heart disease, but a higher risk of stroke, according to a major study. Think about that. A Swedish behavioral scientist has suggested that it may be necessary to turn to cannibalism and start eating humans in order to save the planet. Appearing on a Swedish television talk show about an event based around the food of the future, Magnus Söderlund said that he would be holding seminars on the necessity of consuming human flesh in order to stop climate change. Howard Bloom, author of The Global Brain, with us. Howard, what do you think of this guy's theory? Ugh.
It's a form of insanity.
I think so, too.
He is not alone by any stretch of the imagination. You take any good thing to excess and it becomes a poison, and that's true of environmentalism. So back in 1973, another Scandinavian, Arne Ness, founded the Deep Ecology Movement, and then he founded the Foundation for Deep Ecology in 1990. What did he want to do? He wanted a total human population of 100 million people. Now, how do you achieve a total population of 100 million people when you've got 7 billion humans? Well, you kill off 7 billion of them. Pentti Linkola, another one of these environmental extremists, this one from Finland, another Scandinavian, gave a precise idea of how he felt we should get rid of the extras. He was pro-nuclear war. He said, if there were a button I could press, I would sacrifice myself without hesitating if it meant millions of people would die. And he was also pro-cruelty. He said, what to do when a ship carrying 100 passengers suddenly capsizes and there is only one lifeboat? When the lifeboat is full, those who hate life will try to load it up with more people and sink the lot. Those who love and respect life will take the ship's axe and sever the extra hands that cling to the sides. Basically, movements like this, Paul Ehrlich, writing of the population bomb in 1968, predicted that we would overpopulate the planet so thoroughly that hundreds of millions of people would die. When? In the 1980s. Do you remember hundreds of millions of people in the United States and India and other countries he pinpointed dying? He was wrong. He was absolutely wrong. Then came the Club of Rome in the early 1970s and came up with the idea of limits of growth. Well, guess what, George? We are not running up against limits of growth. We are not raping the planet. We are not overburdening the planet's resources. For every ounce of biomatter, living and formerly living stuff, on this planet, there are 100 million ounces of dead stuff, of dead molecules, just waiting to be kidnapped, seduced, and recruited into this grand enterprise of life. So we are not running out of resources. We are running out of imagination. These people are simply anti-human.
Remember the movie Soylent Green, Howard?
Oh, yes.
Don't forget that.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
And we have to prevent that at all costs. We have to oppose this profound eco-pessimism with a judicious eco-optimism.
When it's your time, thanks, Howard. When it's your time, I guess it's your time. In Cincinnati, an Ohio woman was fatally struck by lightning while jogging in a cemetery. My gosh. A Wisconsin mother teaching her teenage son to drive was shot and killed in what police say was a road rage incident sparked by a minor crash while her son was driving. Tracy Smith was in the passenger seat as the two made their way to a Milwaukee clothing store. When the teen prepared to turn left from the left lane, a gold van cut in front of their car from the wrong lane, causing the teen to collide with the driver's side of the van. Smith got out of her car to check the damage and began yelling at the man driving the van. The van driver said a few little foul words, and then I'll kill you, pointed a gun at her, and fired. Road rage. A teenager from Tennessee died after succumbing to horrific injuries she sustained last month when she was mauled by a pack of dogs. 19 years old, she was visiting a home in South Knox to retrieve her purse, which she left the previous night. When a witness in the home reportedly heard the young girl screaming for help, the witness told police she ran to the door only to see the young girl being attacked by five dogs in the yard. My gosh. 4 years ago, more than 700 computer scientists competed in a contest to build artificial intelligence that could pass an eighth-grade science test. There was an $80,000 in prize money on the line. They all flunked. Even the most sophisticated system could not do better than 60% of the test. AI couldn't match the language and logic skills that students are expected to have when they enter high school. But on Wednesday, the Allen Institute for Artificial Intelligence, which is a prominent lab in Seattle, unveiled a new system that not only passed the test with room to spare, it correctly answered more than 90% of the questions on an eighth-grade science test and more than 80% on a 12th-grade exam. Artificial intelligence is booming. And also hundreds of millions of Facebook users and phone numbers were exposed in an open online database. The company has now confirmed that. And the latest example of Facebook's past privacy lapses coming back to haunt its users. Our expert on such matters, Lauren Weinstein, with us. Lauren, first the AI story. It's coming along, isn't it?
Yeah, and this is this particular project is not to suggest that the AI is as intelligent as an eighth grader, because it's not. But in terms of being able to draw inferences from the reference material available to it, and to see the logical patterns and to draw the logical relationships, this is definitely an advance. And these kinds of advances are stepping stones on the way toward having these systems able to deal with more and more complex problems. This is not, you know, someone was asking me earlier today, what does this mean? You know, is this an eighth grade student intelligence? And it's not. This is a specific set of problems, a specific kind of logical problem solving. It is very important, and it means that many very important problems that we expect AI to be able to solve going forward, this kind of research and these kinds of results are important toward reaching those kinds of goals.
And how about Facebook confirming 419 million phone numbers exposed?
No wonder
I'm getting so many calls.
Gross negligence. Apparently what this one was is, you may recall that it was last year. Remember the Cambridge Analytica scandal?
Yep.
Right? Well, tied in with that was a service that Facebook had that let people input their friends, you know, phone numbers or just phone numbers, and see if those people were on Facebook. Facebook shut that collected a lot of phone numbers. Facebook shut that down almost immediately in the wake of Cambridge Analytica. But apparently, they left some 400 million numbers, and they're saying now, well, don't worry too much about it because there's duplicates. It's probably only really about 200 million unique numbers that were just left exposed without a password in a publicly accessible place. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that data was taken. It doesn't necessarily mean it was abused. It's obviously a little bit old because this would be data that would have, you know, ended last year at least. But in terms of just giving you a sour feeling in your stomach about Facebook security practices, privacy practices, it's just another example. And, it, you know, you get to the point, are you surprised? No, this is just sort of what we've come to expect from Facebook these days. And at one time we would have heard a story like this and been screaming and yelling, and now we hear a story like this and go, okay, here we go again. It's just very sad to see that kind of data. And it's important to remember, even if these are just phone numbers are very important in terms of exposing people to phishing attacks. That's one of the key components of phishing attacks. People have phone numbers and they can use those to help target those attacks. So this is pretty much disgraceful, and obviously Facebook still has a lot of work to do.
Indeed it does. Lauren, thank you so much. Great stories indeed. Our story in the carousel revolving reel at coasttocoastam.com, the highly anticipated results of an environmental DNA study at Loch Ness indicates that the legendary monster said to reside at the site could be a giant eel, just like Stephen Alton has said. It's a great story there. In a moment, we're going to talk about ASTAR's Space Brothers Speak, transmissions from the Solar Council on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. And he's back after 4+ years. Mark Brinkerhoff has had a lifetime of UFO-related experiences, including face-to-face meetings with human-looking aliens and the ability to go out and take photos of UFOs on a regular basis. He lives in the New York area. He has sent us some pictures that are posted right near his name at coasttocoastam.com. The link is right there. You'll see his name under tonight's show. Click that, and you'll see the pictures that Mark has sent us. Mark, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you, George. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Those pictures are kind of eerie. I mean, wow, that one especially that looks like a wavery alien. When you were taking them, is that what you were seeing?
No, uh-huh. They were not in the visible sky.
Okay.
I was directed to aim the camera by the beings I know who are high-dimensional beings, but they can work through etheric levels. And they were trying to show something that's possible. That this is 1977. And a camera I was using was a little brownie Instamatic Kodak type camera with a blue dot flash.
What are they?
Remember those?
Yeah.
They have no lens, really, just a flat front, little 125 film roll or something. And they would say, aim it at this above me. And I would just aim and turn to the direction it was called to, click the camera a few times. And then they turn again to another side, left or right, whichever, and then click again. So I might come up with mostly a roll of blank film, but with one or two images on it.
Amazing stuff.
And when I had an investigator with me in 77 from MUFON, he said he was a photographer, a professional too at that. And he says, do you realize what you're doing is impossible? And I said, no, I'm not a photographer, right? I'm just doing what they tell me. He says, really, one of these little cameras with a blue dot flash illuminates about 10 feet in front of you, and that's about it. Yeah, what's showing in my imaging is something further away. Yeah, we zoomed it in. So the pictures you saw online are maybe the original negative will show up. We put the negative to show where the image is on it, and then we zoom into it with a close-up. So the one there's one with the flange, an under flange of a disc with a probe being shot out, like looks like a comet being shot out of the disc. That's in the top left corner of a negative. And the next one was frame three. Frame three was the disc, and frame six was the porthole looking thing with the shadow appearance of a being. I was told that's what it was. The first one I had telepathically asked and verbally if they could do something with a probe being shot, and that is the one
Interesting. Now, for those who didn't hear you with me back in 2015, Mark, tell us a little bit more about your background and how this all happened to you.
I can go into other deeper background. Huh. If you believe in reincarnation?
Yes.
And I think many listeners do. well, I'm not reincarnated, but what I am is coming for the first time to this planet. And I've always known I was not from the Earth since I was a little child. But what I am is what is called by Ruth Montgomery a walk-in.
Aha, okay.
A person that took on a body that the other soul discarded because of some reason or death or an accident. In my case, it was my mother having a miscarriage. And at 8 months, I came, and the soul that was in my mother, in her uterus or whatever, was leaving the baby. And I was way high up in the hospital, above the hospital, in another frequency watching with my guardian angel. And yes, everybody has a guardian angels, and they're really friends. They're not humans or souls, but they're another substance with Creator that is an angelic form. And they can take any form they need. So we usually have a female guardian angel and a female personification there in our energy, and a masculine ones to help with energy. So I was there with my female guardian angel, who I've known throughout many times in space. And the soul came out of the person on the gurney in an emergency room or the operating room, and it comes up and goes telepathically, the baby's going to be born dead, I'm leaving, goes right on through to the path to the light. My angel says, well, you want to try this one? Because we were trying to locate different ones or bodies mm-hmm. that would be available. When you're walking, you can't just come in because it's karma for the planet. People have been here before. So what we go through councils in Saturn areas and Venus, there's all ancient councils that are there from the galaxies, and other galaxies have their own councils. And we have to give them a case as to why we're coming and what we're doing. So you have to find a discarded body. And one that's not in bad shape, you know, like a car accident.
Who finds it? Do you have to, or is there like some entity that finds them for these souls?
The councils, some of them are called, people have heard of before, but it's not really what they call themselves, but we would know them as Lords of Karma.
Right.
They're in charge of things, but some of them are angels, are like similar to a Christ or Archangel.
Okay.
I've seen angels, so... physically met my own angels, but
now when you walk into a body,
yeah,
how is it? Is it a baby or is it an adult? How old is it?
Well, mine was 8 months inside still. Other people have had accidents. They're very rare. I know from hearing about walk-ins, even with Ruth Montgomery, that people can have a car accident, get thrown out of the car, and the soul gets. Leaves the body. Maybe it was killed.
Okay, so you're walking into a body that does not have a soul,
right?
Because my next question was going to be, what happens to the soul that's originally in the body? It gets somehow tossed out, I guess.
Well, that's the one who met me when passed us. My angel and I levitated. It came out of the body and went up past us and said, "The baby is going to be born dead. I'm leaving." So that soul left. That's when the baby died.
Okay.
And all the machinery down in the emergency area that. Hospital was going, making sounds and flashing lights.
So in a lot of cases, Mark, when an individual appears to have died and then comes back, mm-hmm. do you think it's the walk-in that has come back into that person?
No, not always.
Not always. Okay.
No. I'll tell you one of my experiences, and that'll help you understand that one, too, because people think just because the person dies physically doesn't mean that they've disconnected from the body.
Okay.
That, you've heard that energy cord. There is an energy cord, but you don't really see it. But if you focus to see it, you will see that light cord going through and attaching to the solar right. plexus area.
You can see it during an astral projection, for
yeah.
example.
Okay. It'll look like that with astral projection. It might be attaching to the back of the neck
mm-hmm.
or to the solar plexus area. And that, in truth, when I was when the angel said, "You want to go down, try this," I said, "I'm going to go see the energy around and see if this fits for me." And I hovered over my mother because I didn't know her at the time. I saw a person on a gurney. That's all I could see. And I said, "This fits, is okay for me." And there's also an angel when a body is empty. There's an angel that's there always, and they come to veil the souls going in. You've heard of bailing?
Exactly. Hold on for a second, Mark. We're at the top of the bottom of the hour break, but we'll come right back and talk more about these walk-ins. And I understand you met the late Ingo Swann, the father of remote viewing. We'll talk about that, too. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we launched this week our new feature for Coast Insiders, the Art Bell Vault, something we've been working on for several years now to put together this collection for Art Bell programs. And Tom Danhiser has more.
Yes, yes, yes. This is really exciting. The Art Bell Vault. This is a collection of classic Art Bell programs such as Mel Waters, the famous Mel Waters Hole, Mel's Hole, Ed Dames, Father Malachi, all the great ones. And get this, they're heard without commercials. New shows, we'll add them each week. And of course, there's no extra charge for insiders. Now, this is going to be available on a variety of listening formats, including your mobile device. And in the months ahead, we'll be adding the Art Bell Vault to the Coast to Coast app. Great deal, the Art Bell Vault. So if you're not an insider, this is a good time to become one. Just get over to coasttocoastam.com. All the details are right there.
And if you want to use your smartphone to listen to these programmers and you're an insider, it won't work yet with the app, but it will work with your browser on your smartphone. You just go to coasttocoastam.com that way, and you can listen to the programs. In a couple months, we're working on the app programming for this, and so it'll be working on that too. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Mark Brinkerhoff with us. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We're talking about how he is a walk-in, which is truly remarkable. Mark, let's pick that up again. Then I want to get into when you met Ingo Swann, because he knew immediately you were one of those.
Yes, yes. And Ruth Montgomery, too, in 1980. I was at a fair or UFO conference in Staten Island, and with the investigators, Pete Mazzola and at the Scientific Bureau Investigation. So Phyllis and my wife, we were monitoring the table for them. And Ruth Montgomery is brought over by another friend who met her, and she looked at me and she goes, she was very, very tall. She was about 4'11" maybe, and probably in her late 80s, mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
And she looked at me and she says, "Oh my," she looks my aura.
She knew right away.
She goes, you got spaceships all over your aura. You're not even from this earth. And she goes, of all the people I've met who say they are walk-ins, I've only met one, but now you're the second. So the book, Strangers Among Us, speaks about that, walk-ins and people like that. So I know that when people are in a car crash or something, the person gets killed, and the soul leaves, the body is empty. And if there is a person who's trying to get contact here to do something, usually it's some kind of mission, they don't have to come in to reincarnate or anything, then they can get the body if it's in okay condition. They might be in the hospital with a broken arm or something.
Okay.
But the soul, the other soul that left, might have been their time and maybe had a concussion. We don't know how this works. But I know how, with me, I went into Connect. You connect with your head to the brain section. You connect that way. So the neck, you lock into that frequency on the neck. That's why people talk about blessing the area behind the neck. And when I do blessings, I'm a reverend. I bless their necks and heads and everything in their forehead. And then your solar plexus is another entry connection for that ganglia of nerves there and that frequency to the heart. So we connect in into the energy there as a soul. You compress yourself and move in that position. And then you wait. And you don't start the heart. The creator starts the heart. Hmm. You have to wait for the spark of breath of life to come into the heart.
What is the purpose, Mark, of the walk-in? Why do it in the first place?
Okay, it's when we're trying to get a message, or we're trying to do a certain specific mission in some way to help the souls of the people on a planet, physical density. I've walked on this planet as an etheric person in dinosaur times, in ancient times, Atlantean times. I've met a lot of people on Earth now, you know, different times for the last 50 years who have remembered me from Atlantean times as a space person, as myself, the way I'm out of body and all that. And they say, "You're like 9 feet tall, you know, doing these things." And they even knew one of them even knew my name. And that was back in the 78. So I came in to specifically get a certain information out there to the people, because the planet is running out of time. And I don't know how to explain it any better than that. But there's things happening with our sun. And I hear people talking in the 1970s about global cooling, global, you know, the hothouse effect, and the greenhouse effect.
Right.
And the crew and I, they've said, oh, no, it's always the sun. It's nothing to do with the planet right now. The sun is doing things that the planet has to go through, changes that are normal. And as you probably know, the North and South Pole energies or frequencies are transitioning, so they're getting closer to each other, which could instigate a global flip if that happens, a negative charge flip over, which means it doesn't flip the planet totally, but it causes things to happen. And these are signs in the times that are even in the Revelations in the Bible that Yehoshua, known as Jesus, had said in the time when Israel comes back together that I will return in that generation. I don't know the quote, but the Bible term of the numbers, but it's could be Matthew, I think. It's Matthew 24, verse 4 to 34. So he says that, and that means 1948, Israel came together, and Jonathan Cahn speaks about too, who we all like. So people born in 1948 will be that generation when Yehoshua is supposed to come back. But what's going to happen before all that and after that is there will be liftoffs as well. In the ancient Atlantean times, we came and helped people in our ships, and I was at that time working on the planet Venus. And remember we talked about the councils on those planet systems,
right?
Saturn and Venus. Those are on different dimensional spaces, not on a physical level. There's life on dimensional spaces within the planets.
Star Trek wasn't that far off, was it?
No, not really. And the Prime Directive is real. It's really a true thing.
I wonder who gave Gene Roddenberry the info. Maybe you folks did, huh?
Gene Roddenberry was going out of body and having visions and being given that information, which I think he
interesting
give some of that and bring it as a visual to create a thought form frequency on the planet as people fantasize about these things. So the Prime Directive is true in a way. Of what it means is unless a planet's leaders, whoever the leaders are, call for help from the beings, the space people who are benevolent, we're not talking about negative beings and evil ones and the ones that are manipulating the planet too right now. We're talking about the benevolence, and they will help. And they had come to planet Earth in 1951 and 2, the Aetherians, and proposed information like that, like, you know, putting the weapons of destruction away, because after the nuclear bombs went off, that affected frequencies in their dimensions on the etheric levels. So they now had a right to step in and try to help and stop, because they were watching and monitoring the Earth, and they still monitor, and they still shut bombs off and things. They offered free energy, medical aid, cures for everything that we knew at the time, and to join with the councils and the different, and alliances up in space that are working around our galaxy and other galaxies. But our governments didn't kind of rejected it at the time because they thought there would be a power play on the planet and they would lose power. And the aliens at that time, the ETs, told them, don't accept the information from the others that are going to come to you because they're known as tricksters, and those tricksters were the Greys, and they did work contracts with them underground in the West. So our governments and different other people on the government and the planet. So we have walk-ins when they come in now and then to try to help. That's why that was mine. We had a crew, and out of all the crew, I was the one who walked on planet Earth the most.
Did you like that?
Oh, yeah, we were helping. You know, you come into a physical, you create a physical body on those etheric levels of yourself. You come through in a denser level frequency, and they train you how to do that. And then you can materialize or be beamed in some way down with the craft and the etheric craft. And then you can walk and help and work here, and you can go back and forth. And if you remember Valiant Thor, he was doing that.
Right.
He would teleport out and come back. So, now, I'd met Valiant Thor when I was 6 or 7.
Now, were you a walk-in at that age?
I was a walk-in before I was born.
You were. You've constantly been. So when the entity I'm talking to now, Mark Brinkerhoff, passes on, will you walk in a different body again?
No, I'm just going to go home.
This is it for you?
Yeah. This was my one mission to come through and help. I came with unveiled. I was talking before that there was an angel that waits for a soul when it gets in. They veil them, but she had already been instructed by the councils not to veil me, and I knew that too. So I said to her, as I connected, I said, I'm not supposed to get any veils or clouding. She says, I know. So as I was going in to connect, I said, you will remember everything, and I clicked in, and that was attached in, and all the machinery in the room was all crazy for my mother, and the baby was dead. All of a sudden, the heart thing starts going, and everything goes on again when the Creator sent the light to come through the heart. So I heard the nurses through the muffled sounds of my mother's stomach. I heard the nurses saying something was wrong and everything's okay. We don't know why. We don't know why. And I said to them telepathically, well, that's because I just came in. So from that point, we'll go on to Ingo Swann, because this was amazing.
Now, how did he know?
Well, he's a super psychic, as you know. He was supreme.
He was great.
He was amazing. And when I saw his picture in a magazine upstate New York, where I used to come from, I said to my father in 1976, I said, see this man on the cover of like Newsweek, one of these science mags? And he says, yeah. And I said, I know him in space, and he's an artist. Someday I'm going to meet him. And my dad would say, oh, so you always said that, you know, but every time that you ever said that, you ended up meeting the person.
Right.
I said, I don't know when, but they'll guide me.
So he didn't doubt you anymore.
No, he had witnessed things with me since I was 4 years old. And I told him things about our universe, our solar system at four. So other things about the moon being hollow and being base. So to go to Ingo, I met Ingo around 1993 through friends who set it up as a party. And my wife and I were there to meet him. And at the time I had a notebook full of photographs and the illustrations I have of the art. And I left the book with Ingo. I was just going to go get a cup of tea. So I put the book on a chair. I was going to sit and talk with him, and we're going to go through the pictures. And I come back, and he's already closing the book.
He's already seen it. He's gone through it all.
He went through it all. I said, Ingo, I was going to sit and tell you what the pictures were, where, when. He said, okay, sweetheart. I know what they are.
He knew what they are.
And I said, oh. So I sat down opposite him, like knees to knees. And he's so cute. He was funny. And he says, so, must have been awful hard for you to compress all that energy from the levels you come from and compress in that little tiny baby in your mother's womb, and must have felt very tight, right? And I said, you see that? No one knew this, only my wife. But he goes, yes. Then he says, have you ever been claustrophobic because of that? I said, yes. Because the first time I got claustrophobic, the whole flashback of that occurred.
Amazing.
So then he says, you're your own higher self in your own body here. And I went, you're the second person that's ever told me that, but I already knew that, but I never mentioned it. So he says, oh, yes. So I said, wait a minute, you can. He says, this is you right here in my illustration. And I went, you could see me? He said, oh, sweetheart, I could see you right there through your body. So now he's the super psychic. One other psychic saw me through the body. Even though I look a certain way on physical earth, I'm projecting within the body as a higher self form of my overpart connection or aspect of my overpart. And all oversouls project an aspect or a higher self to the different frequencies. So the aspect that's the lower aspect, which is like a physical body person, now a soul, can connect to the higher self, connecting up through the higher levels, and experience other trainings through that higher part. And it's all an aspect of the infinite oversoul. The oversoul, when I saw a metaphor for it from my friends and crew when I was about 20 or 19 or whatever, teenager, they showed me a giant salt shaker. I was up in space, and they said, here's a metaphor, salt shaker, giant salt shaker. I said, okay, you are the salt shaker. The oversoul is the salt shaker. All the grains of salt inside the salt shaker are aspects of you, and one little grain of salt right now is you on the planet Earth. All the rest are happening at once in different levels, different frequencies, galaxies, universes. And the oversoul knows all that's going on with them, and is basically getting all the memory from all of them, too. So when you connect to the higher self and then to the oversoul, you can have the memory of all those different aspects coming at you, like a total memory of you being on vacations, you know, different vacations throughout your life. And it's hard to explain it any more than that, but that's the truth. And all people on planet Earth are ET, basically, when you think about it. They're from other galaxies, other places before they came here to reincarnate or incarnate.
What do you think of this planet, Mark? You've been here long enough now, and your mission was, of course, to help it. What do you think of planet Earth?
It's a training ground. It's we call boot camp Earth as a little metaphor we say for it. But it's a training ground for souls to strengthen themselves, to learn, And there is negative beings, and there are evil beings, because they were cast here in these lower densities of the physical planet levels. On all these planets that are out there that have a life form that's physical dense like we are, there's negative beings that are there to influence, to trick them, to test them. Now, Creator set it up in that way only because it loves all its creation, and it would not blink them out. It could, but it's given all the souls, and including the angels, a free will. And those angels who were fallen or beings that fell had their free will to do what they did. But Creator loves them and still offers out hope in the future that they might come home again. And all they have to do is repent, and repent with their sincere, all sincerity. Many people think these beings are doomed to be forever in a hell pit. But there are hell pits. There are places like that, and they're lower dense levels, very low, below our frequency. And it's a place where fear is there. And people who are murdering people or eating children or whatever they're doing, you know, how evil it can be on this planet, that's where they will go until they repent.
Are you kind of glad that this is it for you, that you're not coming back anymore?
Well, I'll come back if I need to help, like an etheric, if I have to.
If you have to. But
I've done it before. I came here to retrieve my soulmate, who's my wife. And I've had visions of her in 1976, and I met her in 78.
Is she a walk-in?
No, she's not. No, she's a soul that came to help a long time ago. And like everybody who seems to be here, the people I've met through my soul readings or whatever you call them, spiritual consultations, I can see the aura, and I can see their life in the Akashic, and I could tell where they're from. Almost everyone I've ever seen is coming from another galaxy, another place. But they've been on the Earth for a while, reincarnating. And things that bring people back to reincarnate could be anger, murder, people killing.
In the book, Ashtar's the Space Brothers Speak. Tell me, who again is Ashtar?
Ashtar is a being that is oversoul. He's a being like all of us. But he's been around for a long time. I've known him for, I guess my oversoul will say, I've known him for a couple million years. But he's a being that's throughout the universes and galaxies, just like all of us, working. But he's channeled, or I'm not say channeled, but he's focused into the form of his life he had on our planet here, Venus. And he looks like a Venusian, basically, like Orthon or the people know from George Adamski times. But there's other beings out there, they call them Nordics. Ashtar is not a Nordic, but he can resemble one. And he's really an Adamic being from the Adamic races in space. He's here to protect, and he loves our solar system and the planets and the people here. And many people have known him or worked with him in space, too, who are here.
Would they be confused as guardian angels?
No. Guardians are real angels, angelic form from Creator.
Okay.
But I was going to bring that up. Messenger is the same word for angel in ancient Hebrew and all those ancient Aramaic. So if an angel means messenger, a space being that is angel-looking like, a lot of them are very beautiful beings, the ETs. They look like supermodels, maybe 6, 7, 8 feet tall, and they can be different sizes, too, to work with people on planet Earth. And they were messengers, too, and they're all benevolent. The angels are sent by Creator with a message, like Archangel Gabriel or Archangel Michael. And other angels appear, just like they say, and they can materialize and appear for us and help us. I've been rescued by my angels and levitated in 15 feet to be not killed on the sidewalk around our building here on 3 steps. So there's miracles that they can do with the energy built up around your auric energy field from prayer, meditation, or contemplation on Creator, or people praying for children. Congratulations on your granddaughter. So it's like, pray for her, and that builds an energy around her as she's growing. And the angels have told me that they utilize the energy around the soul, the person, from people praying for them. But that's the energy they utilize for miracles, in case a miracle is needed for a child before the parent knows. And I knew my grandmother was the one who was praying constantly for me, rosaries and all kinds of prayers.
Stay with us, Mark. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more about your work as a walk-in And we'll also take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.